So welcome to this bonus episode of the Stage Left podcast. I was recently asked as a guest on the Chasing the Sun podcast to reflect on 4 years of travelling up and down the UK and across Europe producing and hosting Stage Left. It was really fun to sit with Jamie Nichols in his garden on a summer's day and share some of the behind-the-scenes stories and challenges that I've had along the way over a bottle of champagne that Jamie very kindly provided. He's an inspirational guy himself, and his backstory is quite enlightening, and you can see that on his Instagram page. Also, quick note before we play that I'm actually running a half marathon with episode 29 guest John Woff of the 1975 very soon to raise money for Mind Mental Health Charity. And here's some facts as to why you should donate. So 676 million people worldwide have a mental health disorder. Depression is the number one cause of disability worldwide. Severe depression has the equivalent impact as living with an untreated spinal cord injury. Moderate depression has the equivalent impact as living with tuberculosis or severe motor impairment, and severe anxiety has the equivalent impact as having a severe stroke or kidney disease requiring dialysis, and the impact of schizophrenia supersedes all of the above. Now, one in four adults are diagnosed every year, but only 3% receive treatment, so this is a really kind of underfunded area, and a little donation can go a long way. So I'll be running the streets of London with John Woff on the 13th of October if you fancy coming along to cheer. But in the meantime, if you hit us up a message on Instagram, on our Twitter or Facebook, which is at the Stage Left Podcast or the Stage Left Pod, you'll find us easy enough. And I'll send you the link so you can donate, or drop us an email to simo.cs@gmail.com, and that's simo.cs@gmail.com, and I'll send you the link. Okay, enough about that then. So I hope you enjoy listening to kind of my story. So this is Chris Simpson on Chasing the Sun.
Cool. Well, cheers, Chris. Cheers. Welcome to Chasing the Sun with...
Thanks, man.
I suppose we better do a bit of backstory. So I met you most recently after interviewing Jess from Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds and, of course, the Condors at one of your nights. It's Stage Left Nights.
Yeah, so we do two kind of series of nights. So we have Stage Left Nights, which are set in my lounge, mm-hmm. In my place, where we do like these five course meals, because I'm very lucky. My partner, she's an award-winning chef who's worked in like some of the top restaurants in Europe, and we have these live nights that you have dinner with like a well-known artist, mm-hmm. and that, you know, you have five courses, and then after the fourth course, that well-known artist pulls the chair back and plays a set for about half an hour right in front of you in touching distance, and there's only like eight people in the room, and we've had Jess and Gavin do that. We've had Shuju the Gun did one. We had Emily Barker do one. We've got ones coming up with Abby from the Zootons.
Oh, amazing.
Jess is doing another one. Audrey's
doing
one.
Oh, I want to be at the next Jess one.
Yeah, man.
I'll buy a ticket straight after.
Yeah. And so that's the Stage Left Nights. And we've got a few. Oh, John Woff from the 1975 is doing one. Mo, who is, I'm seeing him tomorrow night actually, he was Michael Jackson's keyboardist.
Yeah.
For the This Is It shows that didn't go ahead. And he was with Michael Jackson about 4 hours before Michael Jackson died.
Wow.
So half past midnight, Michael Jackson said, "Good night, God bless. Thanks for that," at the end of rehearsal,
yep.
And like 4:30 in the morning, the ambulance was called. And he's a really interesting guy. He's played with like everyone, Stevie Wonder,
yeah.
And he's doing one as well. So
did you talk about that night at all?
So we did. So he came on the podcast, and we've arranged to do a Stage Left Nights with him. But the Groucho night is slightly different. It's not under the name Stage Left Nights. It's actually called Groucho Unplugged.
Yeah,
and I co-run that with a guy called James Dale, who was one of my heroes.
Wow.
And then became a very close friend. So he was in a band called Gold Heart Assembly, who weren't that massive, but they were big enough that like they played Glastonbury and stuff like that.
Amazing.
And he ended up being like, he was a hero of mine, and I wanted to do an episode of the podcast where they were breaking up.
Yeah.
Had captured their final ever performance.
Mm-hmm.
We did that, got on really well, and then he was like, "Oh, I'm going to Madrid, do you want to do some songwriting with me?" And I've been a musician and songwriter for my whole life.
Yeah.
And so we went to Madrid together, and then we were like, he was already running Groucho Unplugged, and he was mm-hmm. like, "Why don't you get involved in it?" And I started booking acts, so people have been on the podcast, like Ian Brody,
yeah,
Light and Seeds, Jess,
yeah.
We got them involved, and so I'm just kind of involved in that night. And Groucho's like an interesting place, it's a lot of interesting characters.
Yeah. And it's people of the arts as well, isn't it? It's a really cool venue, man. All of the artists, and it was just, you know, from beginning to end. I think, who was the artist before Jess? She sung a song called skin on skin. Really delicate, really. She was, I think, American artist, got one word name.
Yeah.
She was beautiful.
Yeah, so we book in, like, because we're doing it, constantly booking artists, and like, we did one last week, I can't remember everyone was on the last week. That's really bad, I can't remember. But yeah.
Top of the top, isn't it, mate?
Yeah, yeah, no, so I can't remember, so I wouldn't have, the reason I can't remember the name is I didn't book that particular person either, because I normally try and book in the headlines like Jess and Ian Brody and stuff. But yeah, it's a cool night. The Groucho's an interesting place in Soho that it's got great history, so it's where Liam was banned from. Smash, there's an interesting book that he was so he was in the, there's a famous room upstairs, next time you're there I'll show you it, where it's called the snooker room.
Mm-hmm.
And it's no longer a snooker table because William smashed it up and fired Patsy, and in the way the story goes is that someone came in to try and see what was going on, to try and calm him down.
Yeah.
And he threw a lot of snooker balls.
Oh,
yeah, and he got banned from there, and that room up there is, it's got like a room, like a little corner called Cocaine Corner, and it's got loads of, like, so Stephen Fry has got an entire chapter of his autobiography dedicated to that room.
Amazing.
So it's got a lot of history. Visconti and Bowie used to go in there after sessions and stuff.
Wow.
And it's just every time you go in there, there's someone interesting. And so it's kind of a cool, interesting place. And yeah, we run last Monday of every month, we do a live night in there.
Beautiful.
Yeah, so come down again.
Yeah, no, I will definitely, man. I did check out the last one, and I was thinking, oh, should I do it? It's Monday night, drinking on a school night, because I really enjoyed it, man. It was, and I was still able to, because normally when I go out, I, you know, 0-60 in 0.3 seconds.
Yeah.
Can't get up the next day, but yeah, I was able to function the next day. And as I said, it was a really good night. The ambience was really nice, good energy, amazing artists, and yeah, it was cool, man. And obviously, we got to chat afterwards. Hence why we're here today.
It's a bit of everyone, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Fucking
it was.
Struggling the next morning after that. So I, one of the things that's lucky about Groucho Night is that we get a tag, which we free booze for all the artists who play. But then not everybody. A lot of the artists don't drink it, and so it's left over. And like I have to do a DJ.
Oh, you have to polish it off, of course.
And, often it's always the red wine that's left. But by that stage, I've already had.
That's why he was handing me red wine. And then ARJ, finish that off.
Fucking two bottles of red wine there. And yeah, so that's my excuse, and I was fucking hungover the next day. But it was good. And Audrey turned up as well, didn't she?
Yeah, she did. She did. That was nice.
Which is really nice. Yeah, so it was a good night.
Cool. And this is all back of course, the Stage Left podcast. How did that come about? When did you decide I'm going to start a podcast? What was the reasons? And you know, what was that kind of defining factor? Because I know we're in very similar industries, kind of day to day, 9 to 5.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, you're evidently really, really passionate about music, and that comes across all of your podcasts. Every time we spoke as well, you know, it's just about music, you know, the people in music, and that really comes across, that passion for what you love in your podcast. And I think, you know, when you can make a kind of living, and we'll go on to about kind of monetization, you've already kind of identified one revenue stream of being able to bring people together to enjoy that experience. Where did the podcast start?
So I've been a musician for my whole life, and I was on the cusp of doing some really, really cool things. Singer, songwriter, I was signed to record contract, stuff like that.
Wow.
Publishing contract, but never went anywhere. Nothing ever really to write home about.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the financial crash happened in 2008, I was like, I'm not going to make any money for the next few years. This is going to be bad for people. Why don't I fuck off to university? I've never been to university. None of my family ever been to university.
Yeah.
I do a music degree just to have a different experience.
Yeah.
So I did that. First 2 years in Bournemouth, and then the course got cancelled because the coalition government had come in and stripped away the funding for the course I was on.
Shit.
So we all went to fuck off to somewhere else, which was I went to Brighton.
Yeah.
And it meant that my whole last year, all my marks kind of were on this kind of last year.
Yeah.
So nothing carried over. But by this stage, because I went to uni late, I went to uni between 25 and 28,
mm-hmm.
because I'd had a lot of industry experience and stuff, I did reasonably well. Didn't necessarily have to write new material. I was knocking out tunes I'd written 4 or 5 years ago and getting like really good grades and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but it bugged me why I never made it. Why did I make it?
Yeah, yeah.
And then,
what was the defining factor? Why did it happen to some people? Why does it not happen to you?
So and I kind of wanted the podcast kind of helped me understand that, which was really, really therapeutic. And I'll come to why that was in a minute, actually. But where the podcast really came about is that when I was that bit older in Brighton, at say 28, mm-hmm. I was teaching at attending at a place called BIM, which I now do some work for, actually. And I got on better with the tutors mm-hmm. than the students who were 19, 20, because I was like 28, because they happened to be in a lot of bands that I grew up liking. So like one of my main tutors, a guy called John Stewart, is a great great influence on me, and he was in Band Called Sleeper.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jake Shillingford from My Life Story. But yeah, just people from bands that I'd kind of grown up in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Going to the pub with them, and then Jake, after like three or four pints, was like, oh yeah, like my band were the only band to open for Oasis. Oasis opened for my band and stuff.
Oh wow.
And he was like halfway through the series of eight dates, we started realising that more people were there for the support band to see Oasis than them, and they had to flip it halfway through. And I'm like, that's amazing. And he was like, yeah, and then we supported Stone Roses in Japan. I was like,
what?
Like, someone needs to tell your story.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Just because you aren't, you know, and Jake's done some really cool stuff, but like, I was like, someone needs to tell your story. And then what then happened was the arts funding in the UK was ripped out.
Mm-hmm.
And tuition fees went up.
Yeah.
And I started noticing there was great artists who were influenced on me, like Bowie, Tom York, people like that, who had got free education.
Mm-hmm.
and wisdom, if you like.
Yeah.
For free and in the arts, who went on and did great stuff, and thought, well, there might be people who slipped through the net.
Yeah.
Who won't get that wisdom now, so why don't I tell the story of the unsung hero behind the success, so the stage left musician, so not the front man.
Mm-hmm. And that's where the name comes from.
Exactly.
Amazing.
I'm also a big Noel Gallagher fan.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
And so tell the story of the person who stage left, whilst providing free educational content for young musicians going into the industry. That's always been the mission statement.
Mm-hmm.
I've once or twice in the kind of 65, 70 episodes veered away from that. So like when Stuart Lee said that he was a fan of the podcast, who Stuart Lee's in like my top three influential people of all time.
Wow.
And he's a comedian. I was like, right, yeah, yeah, we'll work around this, you know. So we veered off that a couple of times, but mainly it's always the people who are kind of not necessarily in the spotlight.
Yeah.
And what happened was
So if Noel rocks up, you're not going to go, well, actually.
Exactly.
Well, you're stage left, but Liam, you're
exactly.
going to have to...
And the weird thing is, I know both Noel and Liam have listened to the podcast, which is fucking insane, yeah. And, yeah, lots of interesting stories around kind of their members of their bands and stuff like that, because I've had most of those, you know, people from both sides of that.
Yeah, and I think that's where I got most into it, because when I was like, holy shit, Mike Rowe, oh my God, Gem Archer, oh my God, Russ Pritchard, you know, and I kind of started, you know, and I was like, wow, you know.
And a lot of it's luck, because Mike Rowe was the first ever episode, and I just happened to send him a message on Facebook, so we had a mutual friend, and so
uh-huh.
we were friends on Facebook, when you had like a friend being
yeah,
friend.
Yeah.
And I just said, I've won tickets to go and see Noel do a sound check at the O2.
Wow.
Whilst I'm already having tickets to go and see them in Paris 2 days later. And I was like, I'm pretty much going to be like travel, probably on the same Eurostar, like going from one venue to another, going to the sound check. I thought, I'll message Mike Graham, like, see if he's up for doing it,
yeah.
first one. And he just replied, and he went, and Mike, I've seen Mike a number of times since then,
yeah.
and like, I always say this to him, like, I owe everything to Mikey Rowe.
Yeah, then this is where it started.
Yeah, man.
This was the catalyst, that was the first domino in the line before they all started knocking down.
Absolutely. And he said, and he went, okay, let's meet for coffee in Paris. And I was like, fuck, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not
just
qualified,
winged it, just say yes, work
like
it out
that.
When you get there.
Yeah, and we went to Paris, we did it, he's the nicest bloke in rock by far, apart from Dave Grohl, you know, he's the nicest bloke you could possibly meet. And then I upload it to the internet thinking a few of my mates will listen to it,
yeah.
a few Oasis fans, and looking at the listens, oh, it's had 47 listens and stuff. And then on the Thursday, 4 days, like I released it on the Monday, and on the Thursday, it just all these listens started happening. I was like, what the fuck's happening?
Yeah, yeah.
And he works with someone called Sheryl Crow, who is massive in America. Like, so she, you know, like, she's massive in her own right as a songwriter,
yeah.
but she's also got very high profile because she's been married to Lance Armstrong.
She used to be in Michael Jackson's support band
correct,
as well, didn't
yeah,
she?
That's right.
Yeah.
So she had listened to it, and I didn't know how to do it at this stage. Got the photo of me and Mikey from the SoundCloud, which is what I was using at the time,
yeah.
as the play button, and put it in a tweet and on a Facebook and shared it to 1.6 million people.
Wow.
4 days after the start of the podcast.
Amazing.
And I was like, fuck, I do not
right
want to.
Right place at the right time. That was just like...
And she said in a tweet, this is great, listen to my old friend, watch out for bad language, because I saw a few times. So
yeah.
Sorry for people listening to me.
For fuck off at the same time.
Yeah, I'm from Romford, I can't get out of veins. Yeah, and then from there, I mean, probably what you'll have now, you have Jess on, is that you can then start saying in your kind of sales pitch to people then you go to is you say, okay, so this was recorded and was shared to 1.6 million people by Sheryl Crow, and it's recorded the week that Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds were number one in the UK charts in Paris.
Yeah.
Would you like to come on?
Wow.
You send that to enough people,
yeah,
people go, yeah, of course. Especially given their stage left musicians, and actually not many people ask them.
They want to know their story rather than the star itself. So sounds like, as you're saying, the unsung heroes, you know, the real kind of backbone behind the kind of scenes.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then from there we had Lawrence Juber, who was Paul McCartney's guitarist in Wings, and he's won a couple of Grammys. And then off the back of that, this is, you know, this is the payment in that comes from podcasts, which is people don't make much money from podcasts at all, and that goes to the very top. But the payment is things like Launch Juba played on my record, double Grammy winner for free, just on my record, played guitar parts, and he's absolutely legend. Shane Keister, Elvis Presley's pianist, played with the King, is playing a C3 organ in Nashville for free, just as a thank you for being on the podcast. And lots of things like that have kind of come from it, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's taken you around the world as well. You've been to Paris, where else did you go? You said Barcelona?
So Barcelona was good, so that was to interview Dan McDougall, who was Liam's drummer and plays quite a significant role in Liam's band. So I think a lot of Liam's band get a little bit of stick, and the band are aware of that, unfortunately. Yeah. But
Oasis is a tough act to follow, isn't it?
They are, but Dan, like, for instance, he's an incredible songwriter. So the reason he is in Liam's band is that he was the person who was chosen to bring Liam's songs to life from the demos, because he plays every instrument going and is an amazing songwriter. And is an amazing musician. And in many ways, like, I think Dan not could take or leave being with Liam, but he's got plenty of other things that he's got on the horizon. He's not kind of like, oh my god, I've got this like dream gig. He's an amazing drummer, and in fact he's an amazing drummer, but that's probably like the not his main string to his bow. He's just great, he plays everything. So we did that, and like I'd had a really heavy night out the night before in Barcelona, and when we did the interview I'd lost my voice, and it's really shocking to listen to. And I completely lost my voice, and he was kind of nursing me through it. He had to do most of the talking, which is the way it should be. And that was pretty cool. And I guess kind of the funny story about travelling was Rome. So Russ had, this is a bit of an insane story, so stick with me on this.
Yeah.
But so Russ arranged, Noel was supporting U2 in Rome.
Yeah.
And Russ arranged for us to get on the guest list through Noel. We're the only people on the guest list, which is very, very special. But it's quite a rigorous process to get onto U2's guest list.
Wow.
And you have to fill in forms and everything.
I bet.
We go out there, me and my best mate Steve, and we're like, I prepared for this interview so much. He was obviously Mazoot on, so he co-wrote Valerie and stuff.
Yeah, I saw him at Brixton. And we had some mutual friends and we hang out with him.
Nice.
Yeah. And he's super
people.
Cool, really lovely human being.
So we get there, and we're staying right by the Spanish Steps. You've been to Rome before?
No, I haven't.
Go there. It's my favourite city in Europe. And get there, and someone on the Spanish Steps, it was like fate, was playing Valerie. Right?
Wow.
And I was like, so I went up to her, and I was like, I'm interviewing the person who kind of co-wrote this in the morning. Any questions? And just straight away, she was like, through broken like Italian language, she was like, just like, oh, so why did Amy Winehouse do this? It's like, no, it's nothing to do with Amy Winehouse. This is pre-dated. Anyway, we go to, this is probably the most, if I ever say to people, it was, you know, best day of my life and the worst day of my life, it was that day. And
really?
That's no exaggeration. This is going to go down an interesting way, but we can go to.
Okay, so, I felt I need another glass of this.
Like. Yeah, you do.
You want to top up?
Yeah, go on. So, I go to, I'm with my best mate Steve, and we've been in bands for years and done some really cool stuff, and we never quite made it. And we have this manager called Joel, who did everything for us. He paid for us, he basically gave us a wage to be in a band and recorded like in St. John's Wood at his home studios and stuff, and he gave us amazing guitars and all this kind of stuff. And we kind of owed everything to him in many ways. I go to interview Russ at this amazing hotel that they're staying at. Fucking amazing place with you two. We do the interview, get on like a house on fire, do a fantastic interview, do a video outside, and then he's like, oh, Mikey wants to see you. He wants to catch up.
Nice.
Yeah, go on, thanks.
Still a bit warm.
So he's like,
right, one or you want two?
Yeah, I want two there, thanks. Thank you very much.
No drama.
So, Russ goes, okay, Mikey wants to see you outside and like just to catch up. Come down by the pool with us. And I'm like, fucking hell, this is great. But because the interview was about like 1 o'clock and I was a bit nervous before the interview, I hadn't eaten anything in the morning. I was like, look, let me get something to eat by the pool and I'll come over to Mikey. So sitting there with best mate Steve, like literally my best man, who's you know, when I got married and like just the closest mate, been in my bands for years, we've written together.
Yeah.
He's one of his heroes again. And we're sat there and I get a message, a Facebook messenger, saying that Joel, our manager, died.
Oh no.
I'm like, fuck. This is like moments after like a real peak. So then we're like, shit, we've got to process that. And then we looked up and then Gem was sat on the next table. And I'm like, fuck, Gem's there. And Steve's like, oh my god, this is insane. Like Gem's there. Like, and then we're processing all this information at the same time. And we're kind of a bit starstruck by Gem, but we're just trying to play it cool.
Mm-hmm.
We finish what we're eating, we walk round to where Mikey is, and then Mikey, being the nicest person ever, just puts, like, it's basically talking about how great the podcast is, and like, just very complimentary with Russ, two of them.
Amazing.
And then Russ goes, "You want to get Gem on? I'll get Gem on for you." Right, he said, "Watch this." So he goes up to Gem, and he says to Gem, "Chris, this is Gem. You've got to go, Gem, you've got to go on this podcast." And Mike, and then he's going, "No, I don't know what podcasts are. I don't know what blogs
are."
Old
stuff
school, like
that.
Yeah. He went, no, and I had a business card.
I remember when he joined Twitter for BDO, just a shambles.
Exactly, yeah. So
No, it was Instagram. It was like Gem Archer BE.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he's not really into kind of modern kind of social media and stuff like that. So he didn't really know what podcast was. So Mikey and Russ are then selling my podcast to I'm not even saying anything.
No. Well, that's how you can tell you've got a good product when there's other people selling. You got Sheryl Crow.
Yeah, yeah.
You got Mikey and Russ.
So I said, Gem, and I told him the Tony Visconti story, which I could tell in a moment, which is essentially Bowie listened to the podcast and sent on Tony Visconti to do the only interview about how Bowie was recording Black Star before he died. And we released, I recorded New Year's Eve, we sent it to Bowie on the Wednesday, he approved it, listened to it that day, I released it the Friday, and Bowie died Sunday night. So it was the only kind of record about how he was recording Black Star, which completely made the podcast huge.
Yeah, and you think that's where Noel got the name Black Star Dancing?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I think it probably was, actually.
Yeah. It's got to be, because it's very Bowie-esque, isn't it?
It is Bowie-esque, yeah. So then I told that story to Gem about Visconti, and he loves Visconti because of his production and T-Rex stuff, and I think T-Rex is a big influence on Heavy Stereo. So Gem goes from going, "No, I'm not doing it," to within 30 seconds going, "I'll drive to you."
Wow.
Fucking hell, put his hand out.
Amazing.
So then we are walking away and we're flying. Like, we're literally like, we'll see you at the gig, we'll see you at Rome Olympic Stadium. We're walking away, and Steve was like, my best mate Steve was like, "That was like a dream, that's so mad." And then we're still processing news about Joel and stuff like that. So anyway, we then go to the stadium, go to where you pick up the guest list, and there was only two people on Noel's guest list, me and Steve. And we're like, how magic is this? As we're pulling out the tickets, I hear Steve go, "Oh my god, what? Joel, our manager, he'd taken his own life." Which we didn't know about. We didn't know that he was in that state, in that place.
Yeah.
And we were like, fuck. So then we're walking into the stadium and we're like,
having
trying to process
this. Yeah, Jesus.
You sit down and they're on early because they're supporting you two. And they play this incredible set. And I don't just say, I've seen like Gallagher Brothers play gigs, you know, in various forms, like probably 30, 40 times. And they sounded the tightest, I would say. Like, it was just a really professional outfit. I think it was just after Gemma. No, hang on, let me guess right. I want to say I think it was just after Gemma joined, so it was like, oh, and Chris Sharon as well.
Yeah.
Really tight acts, like, they were just all on it. We enjoyed that. Then we were like, okay, during YouTube, we need to just, like, watch a bit of YouTube, we need to talk about Sam and Joel.
Yeah.
So we spend the evening kind of talking about Joel, reminiscing about him. We watched YouTube, which I'm not a big fan of them, but it was an incredible show. It's the
Joshua Tree.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Then, and we're like, this is the craziest day ever, the highest and the lowest you could be. Our phones run out of battery because we've taken so many photos and videos throughout the day. We go for something to eat at like 1 in the morning. I get back to the hotel, plug in my phone, Steve plugs in his phone, and he goes, I've got a load of missed calls from my wife. So I check my phone, I open it up, and she had found some old messages I'd been sending to a girl, and she says, I want a divorce.
Holy shit. Fucking hell, so your band manager and the divorce.
On the same day. There were times where it's like, that's
about business, yeah.
Yeah, wow. So Rome's very much.
What a shift. Because that was like an end of two things, however, the beginning of this podcast.
Do you know what? I didn't think of it that way, but you know, I know you're into your mental health stuff, and I now deliver resilience and stress management training.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I always think of is that in the Chinese language, there's only one word for crisis and opportunity. And whenever there is a crisis, I always, or something that stresses me out, I kind of think, what's the opportunity in the crisis?
Yeah.
And parking, not this isn't related to the Joel bit, but the personal thing that was going through the divorce, it was like, this is fucking terrible. Like, I didn't see this coming. I've now got to deal with this. And retrospectively, incredible things have happened in my life, and I've met my partner, the Villa, which she's absolutely fucking amazing. We run the supper clubs together, and like, you know, we're very, very settled, and things are wonderful between us.
Yeah.
And she's very, very special. And all these other things that have happened wouldn't have happened if I'd stayed in that world.
Even
geographically, like, I was living in Romford, which I lived in for 34 years, and now living more in central London, and that kind of thing, the opportunities that's created, the Groucho stuff,
yeah,
all the other stuff. So, you know, I'm not saying it was a blessing in disguise because it was a horrible day from that aspect, but it was just the most fucked up day. And Russ rang me the next day, so I sent a message saying this is fucking what's happening. Russ rang me the next day, and like, and it was just a fucked up time in my life. And you know, I remember having a conversation with a mate, and I felt really guilty about it when I said it, because I was just like, I guess I was clutching at straws, but I was like, well, at least I can kind of spend more time on the podcast, which I kind of thought, that's such a shit thing to say. But
no, but it's allowed you to now allow that to flourish. I mean, I'm going through a similar kind of thing now.
Yeah.
I'm going through a divorce, came out of a relationship in an environment maybe where I wasn't able to grow or live to my full potential, not being able to do stuff. And now I'm kind of in my own environment, and I've got the freedom to do this as much as I like and build my other businesses and stuff. Whilst, you know, it is a very difficult thing, I've got no doubt that it is probably the best thing ever to happen to me, you know. And it is how you, as you were saying about mental health and stuff, it's how you reframe these things. But going back to, so when you were saying, I had a little chuckle. We went to a gig in Hammersmith. It was the first time I'd seen Oasis at their peak in a small venue.
Oh, I think I went that night, Hammersmith Apollo.
Yeah. So.
I was there that night, that's a great gig.
Turn Up the Sun starts, this is the opening number. I get a text from my mum, whatever's in your Xbox is now down the toilet, she found our phone. At the time, I was knocking out.
Really?
Yeah. And I was like, and you know, I was consumed by like beer that I couldn't enjoy it. I couldn't enjoy the gig. So when you said that about being at a gig but not being able to enjoy it, I just relived that fear, and I was like,
it's a shame, man. I was at a gig. That was a fucking great night. That was, what I did that night was, well, it's really hard to get down the front for an Oasis gig.
Yeah.
But if you go to the side of the stage that Gem and Andy were on, it was actually really easy. So I ended up around the front because everyone goes, well, I'm going to be right in front of Liam, right in front of Noel. Just kind of get this really easy route, so I managed to get right down the front for that. That was a good gig.
So
some heavy shit happened on that day in London. But it was you know, I genuinely say there was some of the happiest moments of my life happened on that day as well.
It's mad, so bittersweet, man. And they say, you know, like that, it's almost like yin and yang, you know, you've got the good bits, the bad bits, and it's, you know, it's life at the end of the day, man. Cool. So off the back of Stage Left Podcast, you've now developed Stage Left Nights.
Yep.
And, you know, and where did that idea come about? When did you decide to kind of branch out? So you started to get some traction with the podcast. That's now growing at a steady rate, and you're getting Sheryl Crow, you know, retweet your
link. That's 4 years ago. I mean, we've had like Ricky Gervais retweet stuff, and like David Baddiel, and like
amazing.
I mean, they're not, you know, they're, but like all bands, and you know, I'm trying to think, it was the biggest retweet, but I can't think, but I mean, so that kind of stuff has happened kind of gradually over the years, and but you know, which is great. I tell you, the biggest thing that happened in regards to so the Bowie thing was big, but also like Fox News did an article as well. So that was like on we did an episode with a guy who was in Guns, who is still in Guns N' Roses, called Richard Fortus, and he let slip that they would release, you know, recording new material, and that just went massively viral. And this will happen with your podcast, like someone will say something or do something, and you don't want to trip them up. You know, always check with the artist that they're happy for everything. You've got a final edit of anything that goes out. And I have had to edit stuff out in the past that they didn't want to go out, and that's fine. Fox News and being in Daily Mail, I hate fucking Daily Mail, but at least, at least you know you're getting decent, credible source, because it's coming from me. But yeah, so Daily Mail, like national papers, and the one that was a bit tricky was, I felt a bit sorry about it, was the episode I did with Paul Gallagher. It got picked up, and then there was a story that went a bit viral. Yeah, so it's a little bit tricky that I know it upset Paul a little bit that an article was written about and misquoted.
They take a certain aspect of it, and then...
And I do know that upset Noel quite a lot.
Oh, really?
And that damaged their relationship.
Oh, shit. Yeah, because I noticed that he's not as thingy, as friendly as anymore. I hope that wasn't the catalyst.
Yeah. No, I was told by one of Liam's band that... Paul had appeared on a podcast, and he'd said something that upset Noel, and now we have banned him from his gigs.
Yeah,
and we know that was...
Oh, shit.
So hopefully they're all right now, but... Yeah, thanks, man. Hopefully they're all right now, but, you know, so you've got to be a bit careful. You don't want to upset people.
But then you, at the same juncture, you can't control what's reshared, do you know what I mean? And in what context they report it, do you know?
That is something that's a bit scary. Oh, so, like, here's a good one. It's a flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers responded to one of my tweets, and it's a scary world when you wake up, because the time difference, because it was in America, and they are, like... There gets to a point where notifications on Twitter you don't get all them. They just stop telling you about a notification that one tweet because
there's
too many. Yeah, I've only had this once or twice, and it's like, fuck. And it's and then he actually then like people were abusing you and stuff like that. Like just Red Hot Chili Pepper fans are just like
really.
Yeah. It's just,
well, what context was that then?
It was just I can't. It what really I just wrote about something to do with like I love your back your backing vocal on something, and he responded, but it was his first tweet. In like 2 years.
Oh, really?
It's really fucking weird. I swear to you, yeah. And like,
this is like just, you're fucking in the right place at the right time for all of these different things.
Well, maybe. But it
is.
It's,
you can't, like, fair enough, once or twice, but if it's consistently happening, then you're obviously doing something right.
I think that's probably just coincidence. But, yeah, I mean, yeah.
There is no such thing as coincidence.
No?
No.
A bit more of a fate name.
Yeah. 100%.
I think Mr. Echo.
Like, you can't keep getting it right time and time again. You're in the right place at the right time as many times as possible. And because you've got a good reputation and you're building a good network of people, it's, as you've already said, it was other people recommending you to all of these different artists. Mm. So you're evidently doing something right. And you're probably the only one podcast, probably within the UK, in that kind of music genre that I have consistently listened to.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
you
good.
Know, and that was even before I met you. So when they said, "Oh, that's Chris from," and I was like, "Piss off!" And I was like, "Seriously, I had to come and say hello." Do you know what I mean? Introduce myself, and now here we are.
Yeah, here we are.
Yeah.
But yeah, so.
And now I want to come to one of your nights.
Yeah, do yes. Yeah, so the supper club's great. So where that came about is Davila, my partner, is as I say an amazing award-winning chef, and people come for the food, right? So, like the food, I'm not just joking. Is like
we
had people at Jesse's one who went. That is the best meal I've ever had. And I've gone, oh, that's really kind of you to say. And they were like, no, that is the best meal I've ever had. And they're Oasis fans.
So and like, it looks it as well. It's like proper. It's,
She's like, so she did the equivalent of a chocolate making degree in Bruges. And she's a pastry chef who's learned the skills of being like an all round chef doing those things stuff. And like the amount of like, last one we had like people like, that's the best pork belly I've ever had. And like, that's the best meal I've ever. We have that all the time. And I'm not just saying that.
Yeah.
So people come, firstly, just come for the food, but also,
do you ever get home and you've got nuggets and waffles?
Yeah, we like our dirty food. Yeah,
yeah, a bit of beige.
Yeah. We, oh, mate.
Or is it every night just like?
No, we had a Domino's last night. So that's fine. Yeah, and she loved it. She had like chicken dippers and all that. So So we love all that stuff as well. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm very lucky to be with someone like that. And so she wanted to have run a supper club. That was her dream. And I was like straight away, my business head was like, okay, so what's the USP? What's the unique selling point? And then we were just like, initially we said, why don't we do it? Like a podcast and a meal.
Yeah.
But then the first person we asked was John Woff. And we were like, he was in 1975. It was fucking massive. Like, you may or may not like them, but they are a massive, massive band. And he was like, yeah, I'll play something.
Amazing.
And then again, podcast, the next one, I'll play. And like, that has had some very, very special.
So then now, is that what you punt to artists? Say, right, so this is the format.
Yeah.
Da, 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 da,
and then, we pay well. I mean, so the tickets are expensive, as you would expect if you're going to have dinner.
With,
like, you know, a five course meal with someone. And people have flown from Sweden for it.
Wow.
People have travelled down from Leeds. I know it's not that far, but it is to be Leeds to London. It's an effort for, like, just a dinner.
Yeah.
But it's because you get to watch someone play your favourite songs in front of you. Had people in tears because imagine like a band you really love and they're playing your favourite songs right in front of you and we've had a lot of that. And we've had loads of cool people do it, and the special one for me is I remember 6 months before we did it, there's an artist called She Drew the Gun who I'm a big fan of, who Davila, my partner, was in the kitchen doing some cooking and she was dancing around and singing to one of her songs, and within 6 months the reason she's
going to
was playing at something like that.
Amazing.
It's like priceless.
Again,
absolute
no
priceless.
Coincidences.
Yeah, maybe. So Mr. Echo in Lost said, never mistake fate for coincidence. Or did he say, no, actually that might be wrong. Maybe it was never mistake coincidence for fate, that was what it was. Yeah. Never get them too confused. But yeah. So the supper club's going well, we've got loads coming up. But we're moving soon. It looks like we're going to move to Clapham, so we're just finding a
place
venue
that's big enough to.
Big enough.
Yeah,
and we've had offers to do them on bigger
so
stages.
Do you have it in your
our
house?
Lounge.
In
our house.
So where you live?
Yeah.
So when you're looking for a new place, you have to make
it's
sure
the right
it's
size.
Yeah.
Like, on my phone right now, we're literally, she's sending me through, probably there's five right now on Rightmove and like Open Rent and stuff.
Yeah.
And the criteria is, has to have a dishwasher because there's so much washing up and it fucking drives me nuts when we haven't got a dishwasher at the moment. Criteria is, got to have a dishwasher, got to fit enough people for a supper club, and got to be nearer to a station so that people can
supper club.
We've got John Watt doing one in on the 16th of October, doing one a tribute to John Coltrane, like a sax player.
Wow.
We've got So Mo Pleasure is doing one on the 1st of October, so that's quite soon. Yeah. And he's going to play like Michael Jackson songs that he played at the last rehearsal and stuff like that. Yeah, which is going to be fucking amazing.
Yeah.
So if
there's any MJ fans out there.
Yeah, a lot of MJ fans are going to... And I've got to deal with the fact... So he came on the podcast and we've talked about... It's a delicate conversation, but I say, you know,
the
Finding Neverland documentary, or no, Leaving Neverland documentary.
Yeah.
How has that impacted you as a business?
It's
quite a big thing. Yeah. And I'm a little bit worried, you know, advertising something with Michael Jackson in the title at the moment is a delicate kind of ground. So, but I hope that, you know, we'll sell their tickets fine, I think, because he's got this big
name.
And he's got a big following. And he hasn't just played with Michael Jackson, he's played with everyone.
Yeah.
So they're quite good nights, and lovely to come to one.
Yeah, I will. When's Jess going again?
She said. So when she originally was in October.
Yeah.
But it's dependent. Basically, who's the person who's calling the shots on dates in her diary?
Yeah.
It's Noel Gallagher.
Yeah.
Who's the second person? Gavin.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's got to just work around. But she's up for doing it.
Yeah.
Audrey says she's up for doing it as well.
Oh, wicked.
So that'd be interesting. So I'll let you know when that is. So we just.
Yeah, definitely.
I spoke to Jess yesterday.
Yeah. How much are the tickets?
It's dependent on the event.
Oh, okay.
I would say Jess's. The last one we did for Jess was 100 quid a ticket.
Cool.
Which you're only getting. You're getting a 5-course meal and booze and Jess playing, literally, like touching his knees.
And
there's only 8 seats.
Yeah.
And that's why it's got to be that amount also, because we pay the artists as well. So one of the reasons people want to do it is a lot of artists, you'd be surprised how many artists play unpaid gigs.
Yeah.
Like at that level. A lot of them do. And what we do is we just basically say, like, we take the cost of the ingredients out. And then we split it 50-50 with the artists, because it's 3 days work for us essentially putting it together, and we say artists gets 50%.
That's amazing.
Like, yeah, great, and they get a great meal and everything, and often they're people we know who are just up for a good night anyway. So
it's just like chilling with friends.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly what Jess said actually when she came to the last one. So
does Gav come as well? Is he involved?
So he did, absolutely.
Because I'm watching them, man, they're electric. Like their connection and the way that they just kind of connect, man, is something I've never seen before.
And they played here, didn't they?
They did. Yeah, they did one song, man. But
Goodbye, Mr. Rain, right?
Yeah. Beautiful, man.
Yeah.
And we're currently in negotiations. So Jess has asked me to send, because they've got their new album coming out. So she wants to film some more content. So I said I'm happy to do that for free,
nice.
Just to come and just to enjoy it. Do you know what I mean? Just to be a part of it. So she says she's back in September. I'm not sure. I know she's in the States at the moment.
Yeah.
So we've been WhatsApping and stuff. So really looking forward to that, man.
Yeah.
So what's the plan? So you're doing stage left nights. You're doing the supper club. You're doing Groucho Unplugged.
Yeah.
And of course you're doing stage left podcast.
Yeah.
You know what? So you're already getting really good traction.
Yeah.
You know, is the dream to be able to do it full time and to be able to pack in the 9 to 5?
Nope.
No. Okay.
No, because my 9 to 5 is supporting people who are affected by sight loss, and I've always worked in the charity sector, and I feel that everything I do, I want to go towards supporting someone else, and I see, rather than, you know, quitting a job and doing that, and I think the podcast does go along to helping young musicians, that's the whole point of it.
Yeah.
But I don't believe in doing one thing.
No.
Realistically, like, people don't make a full-time living out of a podcast, but what it is a great enabler to other things.
Yeah.
So, that would be my, like...
Yeah, but you've already established 2 other strings to your bow, you know, and it is just about looking at how you can expand that
and
building more assets or more kind of, you know, branches off of the stage left brand that you've already kind of built, which has already got such credibility.
And that, what you just said there, the credibility and the integrity of it can never be compromised. So I think the moment I'd be like, okay, I need to, how can I make money, because I've got to pay some bills, and see this as my kind of main income stream.
And because you're already mission led, you know, your mission is to, you know, educate young people that want to come into the music industry and to be able to, you know, access all of that information without funding, without you know,
I mean, if don't get me wrong, if someone was like, you know I had an opportunity, I was offered the opportunity to, it was in early talk to do the Guardians music podcast, but the realistic outcome
to be able
is that
to
it
do
was
that.
it was less money than I'm earning.
No.
Like, it's not that well paid. I mean,
no,
it's like,
am
I going to sacrifice, like, take two thirds of my weight or a third out of my wages? And it's just, no, at the moment I'm happy doing, I'm in a really kind of content place where I know that it's been every episode I listen put out gets listened to well, mm-hmm. and it gets good feedback. It gives me the opportunity to do lots of other things. So I see it as an enabler to earning a good income, doing other things, rather than being the source of the income.
Yeah.
So if you think of, so I was recently had like a coaching, like I've got a life coach, and she was like, see it as Chris Simpson, the business, and then you have lots of different streams rather than mm-hmm. you have different streams and then go, oh, why am I not making quite so much money out of this thing? You know, the realistic, you know, the world is that Mark Maron, who has the biggest podcast in the world, what the fuck with Mark Maron, who is so big that Barack Obama, whilst president, went on it and chose to go on that over going on Oprah Winfrey because of the reach he would have.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a full-time day-to-day job.
Like
it's you know, you can get good stuff out of it, but it's the priceless experiences that is the thing that's, you know, I could reel off, you know, having the respect
of
my people I respected and looked up to, you know, Steve Cropper, who wrote Sitting on Dock of the Bay, who is like the number one guest I ever went on there, 74 years old, he said, that's like it's the best thing we've ever done, like my favourite thing we've ever done.
Yeah.
And I remember when I told Russ that, Russ went, he only said that because he's got dementia. a bit cheeky. It's I think that if you get into a mindset of chasing the sun, and like I think there's a risk that it could compromise the particular mission of my podcast. That's what I would say. I think you can do it with different podcasts, but you know, I know people who've had some of the biggest podcasts in the world and they've got a full-time job. So yes, I mean, I still get a check-in that's not very much, every I think they send it every 3 months, which is like so little that it's not even worth mentioning, but it's got 200,000 subscribers and it's had over a million listens, and it's had, you know, global reach, but it's more of an enabler to, you know, there's other jobs basically, in a nutshell, that I get paid quite well for, that I wouldn't be paid as well for if I didn't have the integrity of the podcast.
Yeah.
Bring that to the table. This is what I do. People are like, okay.
Cool. Brill. So what we're going to probably do now is just wrap up with some quick fire questions. I'm going to nip off and get my iPad quickly.
Do it.
So it's just going to basically be some. Did you watch Jesse's one?
I did, yeah. Did you get Jess to sign that?
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
I might. She said to bring it down and get Audrey to sign it because she said she was coming down. But... righty ho. So obviously we're both massive Oasis fanboys.
We are.
Favorite Oasis song ever, and I know it's like trying to pick one of your favorite kids.
The Master Plan.
Well, I was going to say favourite B-side, but you've already answered that.
I Just Dream.
Yes, that's mine.
Just Dream, or do you know, I always like I Got the Fever.
I know, you said that when we met, you man, and then my estimations of you plunged.
Went down. I've always had a soft spot for I Got the Fever.
What is it about that song?
It's euphoric in the chorus. And
was that all
energy
around the world?
Single. No, that's a B-side to
Stand By Me.
Yeah, or My Sister Love. It goes into My Sister Love all the other way around.
Yeah.
The Fame. Used to love The Fame as well.
Yeah, The Fame. But Going Nowhere, man.
Well, that was another one from that session. Yeah. I mean, you could just list endless ones, but
my favourite Street Fighter Man was pretty good as well, the cover.
Yeah, but I kind of think, I'll kind of take a leave.
Stay Young was probably the best out
Stay
of that
Young's
era.
Great. Stay Young's great. I mean, there's so many great. I tell you what, the best, obscure Oasis song that not enough people talk about is Who Put the Weight of the World on My Shoulders.
Yeah, that's on the Gold soundtrack.
Which is fucking amazing song with the orchestra and stuff. So that's a bit of an unhelpful
one. What about You Got the Heart of a Star? That's another one no one talks about.
That's very nice. Yeah, I don't love that one.
It's a little bit Christmassy.
Yeah, I'll tell you about something about Christmas in a little while.
I know. Yeah. You tell me that.
Oh, did you? Yeah. I'll get myself into trouble, yeah.
I know you will.
Yeah.
All right, we better not talk about that.
Yeah.
But first record you ever bought?
Morning Glory.
Was it?
And Parklife on the same day.
Ah.
Was it Parklife? Yeah, it was. That was the album. Was it called The Great Escape?
Yeah, The Great Escape is the album.
Yeah, on the same day.
First gig you ever attended?
Michael Jackson.
Yes, me too.
On the Bad Tour in 1988.
Wow.
And I've got a story, which I am actually going to share, which is I'm 4 years old, my brother is six, and my dad had a box, and I don't know how he got this, or the company he was working for got a box,
yeah.
And a woman walked in and said to me, "Would you like to meet Michael Jackson?" And I had only known Michael Jackson through seeing a bit of the Thriller video, because my dad had the Thriller video on VHS,
yeah.
And used to, and he was like, Neil Simpson's the only person who's got the Thriller video, so people had the viewing parties of watching this video, and it frightened the shit out of me at 4 years old, as you imagine, like, Thriller's probably
cool.
Right? So I then start crying and going to my mum, no, I don't want to move. So then my mum's going, "Chris, you're going," right, because this is like the greatest opportunity ever. Like,
in hindsight, so, probably not the best idea.
So I'm hiding behind my mum like this, right, hiding behind her, going, "No, don't let me go, don't let me go. And my mum's going, "Chris, come on, you've got to go." And then eventually looks to the woman and says, "What about his brother?" And the woman looks at my brother, who's 6 years old, and said, "No, he's too old."
Oh. On that note, most interesting person you've met?
Fucking hell, Stuart Lee.
Yeah?
Yeah, really? I'd say Stuart Lee. What, interesting in what... Does it...
I don't know, most interesting, like, either podcast guest, or even, like, you know, in passing.
Most interesting person I've met, there's a great influence on me, a guy called Neil Thew, who you won't know. He was like a mentor of mine when I was at university, and he just had a very challenging life, and he's done, like, he's like taught at Harvard and stuff like that, and he's just someone who I wouldn't be where I am and doing what I'm doing, mm-hmm. if it hadn't been for the way he kind of approaches. Like, he got me into coaching and stuff like that, and he's just a great man. He's had a very challenging life and continues to, but changes the life of other people on a regular basis.
Amazing. Oasis or Blur?
Oasis.
Liam or Noel?
Paul.
Oh, very diplomatic. Mick or Keith?
Keith. I played a guitar that Keith Richards played about 2 weeks ago. I played a guitar that Keith Richards has played. Wow. That's all I wanted to say. Yeah. I played the guitar, I was like, fucking Keith Richards.
I tell you what, when I was watching the thing with Jess, I didn't realise that you played the guitar and she sang some songs.
That must
have been amazing.
Yeah, that was.
Because when I suggested it, because I knew that Casting a Shadow was her favourite song, and I said, "Would you be up for doing a cover?" She said, "If you play it..." And I just sold my guitar, and I was shit.
Man, that's a shame.
There's one out there, and I'm not sure, it's my landlord's, and I wasn't sure whether to
when I went when I went to Christian Madden's house in Clitheroe, who is Liam's keyboardist, we were jamming out Rocking Chair and Some Might Say, which is a beautiful moment, because he plays those acoustically on the piano, and then his son wants to sing Rock and Roll Star, but Christian, if you watch their gigs, never plays on that song. He comes on at the end of Morning Glory and plays on the third song, which is Not Be Wall of Glass. And so Christian's wife and, like, the son, the boy's mum, was just like, "Oh, do you know how to play Rock and Roll Star? He's always wanted to do this." So I'm like, "Yeah, all right." So I'm sitting there, Christian doesn't know how to play Rock and Roll Star, who's in Liam's band. I play the whole thing, the son's playing all the way through it, and then Christian just joined in at the end, where it's like, "Dum, dum, 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 dum." But it comes in the wrong key. It's like, but we rectified it. Yeah, so that's cool.
Lennon or McCartney?
Lennon. I've got a piece of Lennon's front door from the Tittenhurst building in my lounge. It's my most important piece of music memorabilia. But the more I'm learning about the Beatles, you should listen to a podcast called Shut Up, Let's Just Talk About the Beatles. You realise that a lot of things you think Lennon is credited for, the production techniques and stuff like that, like on Tomorrow Never Knows, it's all McCartney's ideas.
Wow. Beatles or the Stones?
Beatles.
Black or white?
Doesn't matter.
Amazing. Looks or personality?
Personality.
Arsenal or Spurs?
Spurs.
City or United?
United, for the history.
New York or LA?
I've only been to New York, so I'd say New York.
Yeah, positive or negative?
Positive.
Love or fear?
Fear, because I think you can work with that to turn it into a positive.
Amazing. Peace or war?
Peace.
Who was your favourite wrestler when you were a kid?
Ultimate Warrior.
Yes! Chris, you've been an amazing guest. Thank you so much. I think we've still got half a bottle of champagne to drink.
Let's enjoy it. Thank you very much. Wow, I do waffle on, don't I, listening back to that. But thank you to Jamie for having us on. I realise there's so many other stories that I kind of want to tell. And it was just a really nice experience to kind of reflect like that. So check out the Chasing the Sun podcast. He's had loads of great guests on already. And I'm sure it will, you know, really fly as an idea, as a podcast. And, you know, in the meantime, if you want to check out previous podcasts with people like Gem from Oasis, Russ Pritchard from Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds. I'm seeing Gem on Wednesday, actually. And you know, never know, we might get him on again at one point. Tony Visconti, Stuart Lee, Steve Cropper, loads of great episodes to check out, because new ones coming up. You know, we release them in the next few weeks, so with a member of Jungle. We've got Tim Staffel, who was in Smile, which was the band that he was lead singer of and decided to quit, and Freddie Mercury took that place and became Queen. So that's going to be really interesting, reflecting on how that was, kind of observing Queen's kind of ascent after that. Must have been challenging, I'd imagine. And Madeline Bell as well, who's an incredible vocalist, who she was the person who sang with Joe Cocker on With a Little Help from My Friends, and done loads of great stuff in a career. So yeah, that's coming up. We've also got Supper Club on the 16th of October, so 3 days after we do that half marathon. And John Woff is going to be playing kind of a live performance tribute to John Coltrane in our lounge with a 5-course meal. So get in touch if you want to take the last ticket of that. So plenty to come, and we'll see you next time.